Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie, and this is episode number 464 for February 1st, 2014. Coming up in a few minutes.
Scotland is the mother of whiskey, and in Scotland I couldn't think of better place than Islay.
John Donnet received planning permission this week for Islay's newest distillery. He plans to build the island's ninth distillery at Gartbreck Farm, just a couple of miles south of the town of Beaumont. It'll make him the smallest multinational whiskey maker. He already owns Glenarmore Distillery on France's Brittany coast. More on the plans for Gartbreck Farm later on Whiskey Cast In Depth. I'll also have the calendar of events, this week's Your Voice, and in the What I'm Tasting This Week department, my notes for a couple of Irish whiskies. All on this week's Whiskey Cast.
Whiskey Cast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Let's start with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. And we'll start off with some good news for frequent flyers. The U.S. Transportation Security Administration is relaxing its rules for duty-free purchases of whiskeys and other liquids for people flying into the U.S. The long-standing ban on full-size bottles of whiskey in carry-on luggage has been a headache for passengers arriving on international flights and connecting to another flight. They had to cram those duty-free bottles into their checked baggage after clearing customs and before going through a TSA checkpoint for their next flight. Now those bottles will be allowed in carry-on bags for the most part. They'll have to be sealed in the original tamper-resistant clear plastic bags from the duty-free shop, and the screeners have to be able to see the liquid inside the bottle. The TSA's website specifically mentions ceramic decanters, opaque and metallic bottles as problem areas, along with some canisters, boxes, and other packaging. Those bottles will still have to go into a checked bag or be surrendered at the checkpoint. One suggestion, it may be smart to ask the clerks at the duty-free shop to take a bottle out of its packaging and put both into the tamper-resistant bag separately, just to avoid potential problems later in the trip. Still no word from the UK's Office of Fair Trading on whether it will approve of Diageo's proposal to sell off about 70% of White & Mackay as part of its deal for operational control of India's United Spirits. Meanwhile, Vijay Mallya's Sahara Force India Formula One team hit the track for pre-season testing in Jerez, Spain this week, and for the first time since Mallya bought the former Spyker team and entered F1 in 2008, his cars are not carrying White & Mackay sponsorship. Instead, the team is promoting Royal Challenge, one of the Indian whiskey brands produced by United Spirits. A Force India spokesman told me in an email that the decision was made by Mallya's UB Group. In other news, the Teeling Whiskey Company has received planning permission for Dublin's first whiskey distillery since the Powers and Old Jameson distilleries closed nearly 40 years ago. The distillery will be located in Newmarket Square, and Jack Teeling told me this week that he's hoping to start filling casks this fall.
There's existing structures that we can utilize for the distillery. We're doing two phases. The main thing is it's a fully operational distillery. It's going to be around a half a million, 500,000 liter triple pot still operation. And we'll also have a visitor center. And the visitor center actually requires more work because we actually have to, let's say, level a building and rebuild that. But for the distillery, where we're housing the distillery, there's existing infrastructure, which is perfectly suited for what we want to do. And it's nearly like a plug and play in that we can plug the distillery operations into to allow us to get up and running fairly quickly. We have been doing a lot of work with suppliers around ensuring that we have equipment that will fit into our own timelines, but we're optimistic that if we get to work fairly soon, we can get distilling within the next 9 to 12 months.
How close is this site to where your family had its distilleries originally in Dublin?
Well, I wouldn't say it's a stone's throw. It's a big stone's throw, but it's like literally a 5-10 minute walk away. They were in Walter Teeling had a distillery in a place called Marrowbone Lane, which is very close to actually where the Guinness storehouse is today, which is in slap bang in the middle of the Liberties, where this distillery is. So unfortunately, we couldn't find a location on that street that was suitable for what we wanted to do. But where we found Newmarket Square, it's an area which has a long association with brewing, distilling, malting. It's an old market square where the grain used to be brought in from the countryside, where there was an ample supply of water, which had a cluster of a lot of different industries that are based from there. So where we're located, there is ruins of an old distillery, the old Busby Distillery on Fumby Lane, and a very old brewery across the road. So it has its own unique provenance and heritage, but links in very nicely to our own.
Now you're using single pot stills. So why single pot stills? Obviously, it's part of the Irish distilling tradition, but you didn't have to go that way if you didn't want to, right?
Yeah, we didn't have to go that way, but you know, Dublin whiskey in particular has a long-standing tradition of a pot still distillation in particular. There is a lot of old, let's say, mash bills and recipes and heavier styles of pot still whiskey that would have come out of Dublin that you just can't get today. And what we feel to be a true Dublin whiskey is to go back to that, let's say, the old-fashioned way of making whiskey. And we will make single malt and we will make single pot still using the same stills. We believe we can do that. But our key is that we want to try and recreate some of these old recipes that would have been to the forefront back in the 19th century during the last golden era for Irish whiskey, because Dublin and Dublin whiskey in particular was at the epicenter of that.
We reported a couple of weeks ago that Teeling Whiskey has signed a deal with Infinium Spirits to serve as its U.S. importer. Jack told me the first shipment is already on its way, with sales to begin in 17 U.S. states starting in April. Meanwhile, the long-awaited U.S. debut of Redbreast 21-year-old is here. The single pot still Irish whiskey made its debut last September in France, and shipments are going out to U.S. retailers now. Middleton master distiller Brian Nation has been in the U.S. this week promoting the launch. I caught up with him the other night in New York.
Well, I think in relation to the Redbreast itself is that it's a different, there's a different style of pot distillate whiskey in it, in that it's got the older kind of trad type style of pot distillate. I think really where the art has come into it has been with Billy Lightner, master blender, in his ability to actually balance the wood contribution and the distillate contribution in order to make sure that no one characteristic overtook the whiskey itself. And he achieved that really by using only refill barrels, and in order to control the amount of sherry contribution in the final whiskey, he actually used a 25-year-old refill American oak bourbon barrel and recast it for 3 years in first use, first fill sherry cask, in order to control the amount of sherry influence. What's key about Redbreast 21 and what was key about all the Redbreast is to maintain that full-bodied spectrum and to be in the category of full-bodiedness, but also for the whiskey to stand on its own. And what Billy has achieved really is in actually bringing additional fruits, like tropical fruits, fleshy fruits, to the fore in this whiskey, and it really makes for a beautiful whiskey.
You guys surprised us a few weeks ago with the announcement that Greenspot was coming to the U.S., because we weren't expecting that one. I knew that something else was coming along, but we weren't expecting Greenspot, and this is something that people have been excited about. I know our listeners have been yelling about this one, that they wanted to get Greenspot for years in the U.S. Why bring this one over now?
Well, I suppose it's great to keep people guessing and to always have something up our sleeve to surprise people. I've just been on the back of a few days now going through tastings with both Greenspot and Redbreast 21, and the reception to Greenspot has been exceptional, really. I think it's great to have the opportunity to be able to bring Greenspot to the States and to release it here. And, you know, it's only good for us and it's good for the States, and sure, there'll probably be more to follow.
Greenspot is expected to go for around $50 a bottle. Redbreast 21 is the oldest single pot still whiskey Irish Distillers has ever released, and it'll be priced at around $250 a bottle. Other new whiskeys to report this week: Highland Park is releasing the third edition in the Valhalla collection. Freya is named for the Norse goddess of love and is a 15-year-old single malt bottled at 51.2% ABV. And Knock is releasing 9,000 bottles of its new 1999 vintage single malt. They'll be available in the UK, Germany, Russia, and Taiwan. Alex Nichols' Spencerfield Spirits Company is out with a new blended malt. The Feathery is named after one of the original golf ball designs, which was a leather hide pouch stuffed with feathers. It'll be available primarily in the UK. Tickets for May's Spirit of Speyside Festival events went on sale this weekend through the festival's website. Some of the tours and tastings have already sold out, including the festival's three-day-long whiskey school. Meanwhile, the 50 golden tickets for May's Kentucky Bourbon Affair in Louisville are gone. Tickets for individual events went on sale this weekend. Kentucky Distillers Association President Eric Gregory told me his staff was overwhelmed by the response to the golden tickets, which were priced at $1,350 each.
We thought that that our bourbon fans would be very passionate about this event, but we have been politely overwhelmed, I guess, at their response. The 50 golden tickets sold out in just over a week, and we probably could have sold 25 more because the people who called after we announced we were sold out, you know, were just furious at themselves for missing out on that opportunity. So every day here at KDA, the phones are ringing off the wall. We've got a war room set up downstairs, and we finally decided let's go ahead and put these individual tickets up for sale and give the people what they want.
What are the tickets going to be priced at for the various events?
It depends. Some events are about $100, and some events go up to actually $250. We've got, everything from distillery tours and programs to opening and closing ceremonies. The $250 tickets will be mainly for this closing ceremony, which is going to be at a historic downtown Louisville venue, a really great, you know, Kentucky bourbon bash to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Congressional Resolution that declared bourbon America's, you know, native spirit. But all the events are just featuring, you know, fantastic, extraordinary insider's access to the most iconic distilleries in the world. And we're really getting excited about this.
And some of these experiences are actually going to come with exclusive bottles, too, right?
That's true. Yeah, in some of these places, you're going to be able to mix your own, follow the bottle like a Jim Beam. You're going to go with Freddie No to the warehouse and hand select a single barrel bottle with Fred. You're going to be able to bottle it right there, wash out your own bottle, bottle it, and take it with you. Four Roses, Woodford Reserve are having very educational small batch training sessions. And, and then we've got things like, hanging out with Fred No in the man cave at Jim's Beam's house. And they're going to teach you to mix your own cocktails after a great whiskey debate. And you get to take home a really cool mixology toolkit right there. So, yeah, most of the distilleries, you know, this isn't just about the experience. They're giving away some pretty good parting gifts that are definitely going to be worth the price of admission.
Is this going to become an annual event, or is this just a one-time to celebrate the 50th anniversary?
Yeah, we hope it's going to be an annual event. Obviously, we wanted to do something big this year to celebrate the 50th anniversary, and we want to see how successful that would be before we plan for the future. We've always hoped that it does become something we do every year, and just given the early success that we've seen so far and the hype and the excitement about the event, I think it's a pretty good shot that we'll have it again next year.
Should the folks in Bardstown be worried about this becoming a competitor to the Bourbon Festival?
No, absolutely not. These are two completely different events. And you know, one thing that we looked at when we started putting this together, because I remember distilleries and the KDA, we absolutely positively 100% support the Kentucky Bourbon Festival and will continue doing so. This event is in the springtime where theirs is in the fall, so we think that's a nice complement as well. Whereas, you know, their events are more centered around Bardstown and things to do there, these events are really centered around the distilleries themselves. So you're venturing out to the distilleries and having a fun time. Now, you do go back to Louisville at night, which is our host city, and we've got some incredible nightcap events that we'll be announcing probably next week to really take advantage of the Urban Bourbon Trail and some of the cuisine and culture of the Commonwealth's largest city. But, Linda Harrison from the Kentucky Bourbon Festival was at our announcement. We continue to support them, that's a fantastic festival, and we look forward to it every year.
The Kentucky Bourbon Affair will be May 14th through the 18th in and around Louisville. And finally, in most countries, this story would be a human resources department's biggest nightmare, but in China, it's perfectly legal. The Global Times, which is part of China's People's Daily, reports that an employer in Zhejiang province based the year-end bonuses for his employees based on how much they could drink. He lined them up one by one at the company's year-end party and offered the men 500 yuan, which is about $83, for every shot of liquor they could down, with lower amounts for beer and wine. The women received twice as much as the men, and at least a few employees received as much as 10,000 yuan each. One worker told the Global Times that it wasn't fair to people who worked hard all year long but can't drink much. The boss told his workers that the company's success depended on his employees being able to hold their liquor with their clients. Wow. That's just some of the week's news. You can keep up with the headlines all week long at whiskeycast.com.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie, introducing Glenmorangie Companta, the fifth release in the Glenmorangie Private Edition range, a complex maturation in both Burgundy and Côte d'Aron French red wine barriques. Find out more at glenmorangie.com.
With wintry weather in full Arctic blast, it seems like the right time to put some peated Scotch whiskies to the test. Our latest WhiskeyCast virtual tastings panel tasted Beaumont's Devil's Casks, Tomaten's Kubakken, and Lafroig's Kirchhoff Portwood Single Malts, and they tasted all three whiskies blind. You can download the January episode of WhiskeyCast virtual tastings from iTunes or your favorite podcast directory, or just listen at WhiskeyCast.com. This week's Your Voice is brought to you by Highland Park. And it didn't take long for the comments to start coming in on the TSA's move to relax the restrictions on most travel retail purchases in carry-on luggage. Stefan Bronner posted this note from Denmark. Since duty-free no longer carries any interesting whiskies at all, unless overpriced no age statement 40% is your thing, this won't change much for me. Well, the duty-free business has taken a major hit in recent years as a result of restrictions like this, as well as the global recession. This change could help boost that part of the whiskey business. And the guys at Jerry's Wines and Spirits in London posted a rather terse response. Who bleeping Ray? Now tell the bastards at Schiphol. Schiphol Airport in Amsterdam has gotten a bad reputation over the years for its attitude on this issue. The complaints are just too numerous to go through here, so just be aware that the new rules only apply to passengers flying into the U.S. and making a connection, and even then not every bottle may meet the standard for clearing security, and the TSA checkpoint screeners are still going to have a lot of discretion. Earlier this week, there was a story on the wires about Miller Coors planning to make a beer that's flavored to taste just like bourbon. Well, personally, this idea just sounds awful to me, and I tweeted out that I'd prefer Miller Coors to maybe try and make a beer that actually tastes like beer. Chris Ratcliffe tweeted back this response, "You know the Monty Python joke, right?" Of course, the Monty Python joke is a classic, but not only is it too long to fit into a 140-character tweet, it's also not suitable to repeat here. If you haven't heard that joke, just Google Monty Python beer and canoe. And if you have a particularly good whiskey joke that you'd like to share with other whiskey lovers, you can always post it on the Your Voice page at WhiskeyCast.com or email it to me directly. My email address is comments@WhiskeyCast.com, and this week's Your Voice is brought to you by Highland Park.
My name is Daryl Haldane, Global Brand Advocate for Highland Park. Go onto our website at highlandpark.co.uk and upload your photo at Inner Circle to have your face on the walls of the Highland Park Distillery.
Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Lafroig. First off, if you're anywhere in the Rocky Mountains region, this coming weekend is the weekend of the year to be at the Miner's Delight Inn in Atlantic City, Wyoming, because the first Friday and the second Saturday of the month are back-to-back. And that means tastings on both Friday and Saturday night this coming weekend. Whiskey 2014 is also this coming weekend in Helsinki, Finland. George Grant of the Glenfarclas will be leading a tasting and single cask selection at the Whiskey Exchange Vinopolis store in London, February 10th. Ward 3 in New York City will host an Anak tasting on the 17th. And if you're in Edinburgh and couldn't get tickets for the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society's Valentine's Day dinner on the 14th, well, there's a burger and whiskey tasting on the 20th at the Queen's Street Members' Rooms. It might get you off the hook. The Winnipeg Whiskey Festival is on the 21st in Winnipeg, Manitoba. The annual Go Whiskey Weekend at Julio's in Westboro, Massachusetts is the weekend of the 21st through the 23rd. And those are just some of the more than 300 different whiskey events on the calendar at whiskeycast.com. It's brought to you by Laphroaig. Take a virtual distillery tour at laphroaig.com. And while you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Islay.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Billy Lighton, Master Blender, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
The sherry butts in particular have a big impact on the flavour of Redbreast. It gives it the deep, dried, fruity notes, which is probably the signature of Redbreast. Take a sip, hold it in my mouth for minutes, and just dissect it and pick up all the little fruity notes. There's something that I didn't notice before. Whenever you leave your glass of Redbreast sitting there for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you can go back to it and say, well, something's changed there. Why is that changing? How is it changing? Is this something that I should be picking up on, you know? It's fascinating. And, I mean, I've been in the business 34 years and it still excites me, you know, things like this.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know Redbreast.
It's hard to believe that Islay's Kilhoman Distillery will mark its 10th anniversary next year, after opening in 2005. By coincidence, 2005 was also the same year Jean Donnet started distilling at Glenarmore on France's Brittany coast, and now he's about to take Kilhoman's status as Islay's youngest distillery. Donnet received planning permission this week to build Islay's 9th distillery at Gartbreck Farm, just south of Beaumont, and construction is expected to begin in May. We talked by phone for this week's WhiskeyCast In Depth. Why Gartbreck and why Islay?
Well, the easy answer is simply that I couldn't think of a better country than Scotland for building a whiskey distillery, because Scotland is the mother of whiskey. And in Scotland, I couldn't think of a better place than Islay. Well, there are many other good places in the Highland, in Speyside. But to me, Islay has something just magic. And so I had somewhere in a corner of my mind, since a few years, the idea of building a second whiskey distillery after Glenarmore. One of the reasons was that having a fully designed the distillery in Brittany, because I had no other option. It was that simple. I thought it would make sense to try to make the best use of this experience. And so one day I found a marvelous place, which is Gartbreck. And I say, God, that's just a magic place to build a distillery. And by the turn of fate, as it happened, 3 months after I saw this, I saw Gartbreck Farm. I just discovered by just an incredible piece of luck that it was for sale. I had only 3 days to take a decision, and I took it. And so that's how I came to Scotland, to Islay, and even more precisely, to Gartbreck.
Now, what makes this farm unique? It's just down the shore from Beaumont, right on the shores of Loch Indal. How's the water, and how's the reaction been to your plans?
Well, what makes it special? Well, first, if you just look on a map, you know, or on a satellite photograph, you will see it's right on the shore of Loch Indal. It's just a mile and a half from Beaumont, on the same side of the shore. When you look across the lock, just right in the axis of the farm buildings, you have Brick Lady, which you can wave, you know, through the lock. A little bit on the left, you see Port Charlotte. If you look right, a bit further, you will see the Peps of Jura. If you look on your left side, and weather permitting, naturally, you will see Island. And beyond this, when you arrive and you are on the place, you know, there are some places which for some reason, you know, brings some magic, you know. You are here, you know, You look at the place, you look around, and you say, it's just magic, it's just like that.
Now, what's the reaction been to your plans so far on the island? Well, I know you kept it quiet for a while.
Well, I'm quite happy because the reaction has been so far very positive. First, by the people from Isla. There are already 8 distilleries on Isla. And, the distilleries are doing very good things for Isla, because they bring employment, they bring visitors, tourists. So, ninth distillery, even although it's a small one, is seen as a very good thing by the people on the Isle. So the people on the Isle are very, very nice and very supportive of the project. And on the, what I can see on the internet, you know, on the social network, etc., it seems quite a lot of people are very excited by the idea of a new Isla distillery.
Now, your plan calls for the distillery, floor maltings, the kiln, and everything on site, and plans to use about, I believe, 20% locally grown barley, and then the rest sourced from the mainland?
Yes, absolutely. Well, the wheat pass, so there will be a malt floor, a traditional kiln, you know, with a pagoda, just a salt dog's pagoda, you know, with a traditional shape, and the plan is to malt about 20% of our own needs. And for the remaining malt, we don't know exactly where it will come from. I would like to have it from Port Ellen Malting, but at the moment, I'm not yet sure, you know. So I hope we can get it from Port Ellen. If we cannot get it from the Isle, you know, because it would be very nice to have it, to have everything local, then we would buy it from the mainland.
Your timetable is to start construction later this year, have it up and running in the fall of next year, correct?
The plans are to start production, the building work in May, you know, and to have the distillery starting operation sometime third quarter next year, 2015. Yes, correct.
Now, you've got some experience with doing independent bottlings through the Celtic Whiskey Company that you run in France with your wife, Martine.
Yeah.
I understand that you're also going to do something similar, at least in the interim, with independent bottlings of spirits under the Gartbrecht brand as well, correct?
Yes, absolutely. I'm very keen to have to try to minimize the period of time during which the company, the distillery, will run cash flow negative. You know, it's when you start a distillery, it's always very difficult from the financial point of view, because once you have a distillery ready to run, all you can do is just spend money for buying malt, yeast, energy, labor, etc. So, and normally it takes quite a few years until you can turn cash flow positive. And so we will start production. We will not start production at 100% capacity. You know, we will raise progressively to full capacity only during the fourth year. And we will have some other activities. And in particular, we will operate as an independent bottler, exactly just as I'm doing with Celtic Whiskey in France. And all this, and this plus a few other things, will enable us to turn cash flow positive during the 4 years, which is a quite favorable situation in this industry, I believe.
Now, you're not going to shut down Glenarmore. You're keeping Glenarmore open,
right?
Oh,
yeah, definitely. Gartbrecht and Glenarmore are two completely separate operations. Well, Glenarmore is very useful because Glenarmore has a lot of experience, you know, which I will use from Glenarmore to build Gartbrecht. But they will stay two independent operations, and I definitely be keeping Glenarmore.
So are you going to split your time between the Brittany coast and Isla, or are you going to spend more time on one side or the other?
For doing the building of the distillery at Gartbrecht, I will spend a lot of time here because I will be looking and supervising everything myself. And when the first few months, you know, or year, until all the parameters for mashing, distillation will have been fine-tuned and optimized, I spend quite a lot of time, most of my time in Gartbrecht. And once all this has been set, I will still be going very, spending a lot of time on the Gartbrecht, but have a different, but also spend more time again, you know, in Brittany. So have a different split between my time in Scotland and in Brittany.
Are you excited?
I'm very excited. Very excited. I have a lot of pressure because running the distillery in Brittany, we are a small team, This is already taking more time than I could do. And this, when I add Gladbeck, the two, looking after the two things together, Glenarmore Distillery and the Gladbeck project, makes for some very, very long and busy days and weeks.
You can find out more about the Gladbeck Distillery in the news section at whiskeycast.com. Let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with one of the whiskeys from the latest episode of WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings. Lafroig's 2013 Kerchiss Portwood finish was bottled at 51.3% ABV and started off in ex-bourbon barrels before being transferred into port wine casks. The nose has a sharp, biting peatiness with hints of orange peel, red grapes, and hints of heather and honey. The taste has a good balance of peatiness and fruity sweetness with dark fruits, orange peel, ginger, and a touch of clove. The finish is smoky and intense with a balance of campfire and peat, along with a soft fruitiness underneath. I'm scoring the Lafroig 2013 Kerchiss Portwood a 91. Next up, we heard from Jack Teeling of Dublin's Teeling Whiskey Company earlier, and I finally had a chance to pick up a sample of the flagship Teeling Whiskey Expression in Victoria a couple of weeks ago. It's finished in Florida Canyon rum casks and bottled at 46% ABV with no chill filtering. The nose has notes of vanilla, ginger, nutmeg, molasses, brown sugar, and honey. The taste has a good balance of sweetness with milk chocolate, molasses, and brown sugar notes that complement oak, ginger, and a hint of almonds. The finish has a good balance of wood, spicy notes, and a nice sweetness that lingers well. I'm scoring Teeling Whiskey an 89. And I finally got to taste the Redbreast 21-year-old this week. It was well worth the wait. It's bottled at 46% ABV. The nose is creamy and fruity with mango, a hint of orange, apricot, peach, and subtle spices for balance. The taste shows the sherry cask influence, but not overwhelmingly so, with dried apricots, figs, raisins, and a slightly dry sweetness. And with time, fresh peaches come out balanced by a subtle clove spiciness. The finish is long, smooth, and slightly malty with a touch of honey. I'm scoring the Redbreast 21-year-old a 94. I've added these tasting notes to the searchable list of more than 1,100 different whiskeys at whiskeycast.com. That's also where you'll find links for WhiskeyCast virtual tastings and WhiskeyCast HD episodes, the latest whiskey news and the calendar of events, the Your Voice page, and a complete archive of past episodes. You can follow me on Facebook and Twitter at WhiskeyCast, and my email address for your questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2014, and comes to you each week from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.